Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research. The Sunday Roast presents 12 stocks for the 12 days of Christmas. Merry Christmas, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Hello and welcome to 12 Stocks for the 12 Days of Christmas. Today we're joined by Ed McDermott, CEO of Seed Innovations. Welcome, Ed, and Merry Christmas.
And to you.
So it's been quite a year for you and what you've achieved so far with Seed this year, with the sale of EMAC being quite notable. Can you talk us through some of the other highlights, please?
Yeah, I think there's been a whole bunch of different things, and some of them have been, I suppose, somewhat ignored by the market, and that's fine. I think we're just in a very difficult cycle right now. I think the great news about, the great news is that the companies that we're invested in are largely all performing better, or at least, at the very least, in line with expectation. And I think, you know, that's the critical thing. Are the assets that we're invested in, are they performing? Now, it's not always very easy to revalue those assets and increase the net asset value because quite a lot of them are private. We've obviously suffered with the listed items that we have because we're just in this very horrible period of illiquidity and sort of poor sentiment across the market. It's not sort of aimed directly at us. It's just aimed, you know, it's everywhere, unfortunately. But in terms of the good things that have happened this year, a lot of it's obviously going to be unseen, I think, is the key thing to point out as well. Yes, EMAC was a positive sale, and again, another example of Seed delivering capital back into the fund, you know, real hard capital, which is, you know, largely unnoticed by most of the sort of small cap traders. You know, real numbers, fundamentals don't seem to be that important to a lot of people, which is I still find very strange. But where we've, you know, when I first took over the company, I was dealt a hand where I had to deal with a lot of legacy assets. Now, not all of those legacy assets were in good shape. In fact, not many of them were in good shape. And it took a hell of a lot of work this year from not just myself, but also the team, you know, particularly Lance Jersey, who's our finance director. So Lance and I have spent a lot of time going in and really spending time with these companies, really understanding what they're doing. And it's also allowed us to uncover a lot of great things that these businesses are doing. Leap Gaming is a good example. You know, some of the partnerships that it's formed, some of the brands that it's working with. In many cases, these were known items, but it's also taken quite a lot of work to actually make sure that they come to fruition. NASCAR being a good example, which was announced recently. So there's been plenty of highlights. Not all of them have been seen by the market at this point, but you know, we had a very crazy stock market, I think is the best way to put it. Dot-com 2000, sort of pre-2000 levels, in sort of January, February, March this year. And, you know, there was inevitably going to be a bit of, you know, paying the piper after that. So I think we've all been caught up in that. But certainly, we've made some brilliant private investments this year, which is one of the sort of key highlights I'd like to mention. Eurox Pharma being one of them. Germany is obviously the biggest medical cannabis market globally at this point in time, certainly in Europe. It's, you know, it's a great company. It's doing all the right things. It's performing better than we expected. But again, there's been no M&A and no fundraise. Therefore, we're not able to value that up at this point in time. Is it worth the money that we spent on it? Hell yes. Is it worth significantly more than that? Hell yes. So, you know, again, that is my well-informed opinion, I think I should add, because until it's audited NAV, it, you know, my opinion counts for little, unfortunately. But, you know, knowing my way around that market, that's been a very good investment for us. In some of the other cases, we've obviously followed our money in a few items, but certainly Little Green Pharma is another example, in this case, of a listed stock that's been somewhat hammered by the poor sentiment in small mid-cap stocks at this point in time. But again, a company that's continued to deliver on all of its promises and more. And, you know, we're really, really pleased with our position. And we think that it will be a matter of time. Again, a when, not if type scenario with that particular company. So those are just two in obviously the cannabis space, which is one of our core focuses that we're really pleased with.
Yeah, and looking forward to 2020, what are your ambitions for the continued growth of the company?
Well, I think we're going to see growth on a number of different fronts. Obviously, we have had, you know, if I'm going to mention the good ones, I must mention the things that have not been so fantastic. And I think we've obviously had a lot of hard work was put into Factum, which unfortunately, again, another legacy asset that's been very, very tricky, ironically, in, you know, a space that's become super hot in blockchain and things that are surrounding that crypto world that's been a bit of a bane, I think, for all of the small cap investors. But, you know, we've obviously had to go through that. At least we've kind of drawn a line under it, and now we have a chance of getting some value back for it. So I think, you know, 2022 is going to be a time where we start to see some of that. But I do think that when the tide turns, and it will, again, I believe it's a question of when, not if. These are market cycles. Most of us who've been in the markets for any length of time will have gone through these things. Things will come back and certain things will absolutely rage. And, you know, interestingly, there's been one area that does seem to have had the sentiments gone from is the cannabis sector. Now, that's not going to last. It's a global product used by millions of people around the world. In some countries, up to 30% of the people in those countries are using these products, whether it be for recreational use or whether it be for medical use. That's not going to go away. The use case scenario for cannabis and hemp as well is enormous. You know, it has a very big green footprint as well that will also be, I believe, in 2022 will be harnessed. And I think you'll see more and more of that across that particular space. And I think it's going to become a very desirable area again, particularly if we start seeing lockdowns and other things where, again, cannabis will prove itself to be a product that weathers the storm of all of these sort of restrictions that we see. And again, it's not a case of these products are being used less. These products are being used more. And then you start getting into the sort of hemp use case scenario, which, of course, has a multitude of uses, but, you know, to name a few, textiles, oils, nutraceutical products, you know, building materials, all sorts of stuff. So, you know, it's certainly not a one-trick pony. We predominantly focus more on the pharmaceutical area and the sort of over-the-counter wellness, but I think that people are sort of missing a trick in it, and it certainly seems in our case that people have completely valued our cannabis assets at zero, which I think is just insane. But again, we, you know, I'm looking forward to people going, oh, you know, well, yes, your conviction was correct, and you know, good on you for sticking to your view. It's actually worked out really well for us. So I think people will be saying that next year. Of course, Leap is a really big one for us, given that it has such a big part of our net asset value attached to it. And as I said, when we first got involved with Leap, it had lots of, you know, a great platform, but lots of things that needed doing to it. We've worked really closely with the management, as have IMG, obviously a significant shareholder. And, you know, again, people seem to always forget these things. And they're not looking at the gaming market. They're not looking at what's going on there with M&A, with the valuations these companies are achieving. And although we would have liked to have got an IPO away by this point, as I've recently communicated, you know, it's looking H1, I hope. And, you know, there's lots of things that can get in the way of these things, but realistically, it should be closer to Q1 end than H1 end. So, you know, that's about as good a guidance as I can give without crossing any lines. But, you know.
And really, in this market, you wouldn't want an IPO anyway.
Well, look, I think gaming's been one of those areas that's actually been, I wouldn't say immune, but it's certainly had it's continued to have a very good run. Again, another sort of globally utilized service and product And again, I just don't think that's going to change. People are talking about regulatory changes. And look, regulatory changes are generally a good thing. It's an area, you know, we're very happy with highly regulated markets. And I think most gaming companies are too, because it allows them to operate in a sensible sort of customer care way. And it doesn't really change their revenues in enormous manner. But as you can also see, gaming revenue multiples have gone up over the last sort of 12 to 18 months. So even if there is a drop in revenue, it's countered by the fact that the revenue multiples that are paid for these companies is seemingly going up. So I think we've got a lot of good things to look forward to. I don't want to be the guy that sits there every year and going, oh yeah, next year is going to be better than last. But I truly believe that we're right.
It can't be that much worse, let's be honest, in terms of your share price, anyway.
No, the share price is, I mean, it would be laughable if it weren't so deadly serious. People, I think, believe that I'm somehow sanguine and relaxed about the share price. I'm absolutely not. But it's one of those things you cannot control on a daily basis. What I can control and what I can influence is what happens with these companies and making sure that for all of our investments, we get the absolute best return possible for shareholders. Ultimately, I know what my job is and I do it. The board knows what its job is and they do it. We have additional people that we took on this year in terms of Alfredo Pasquale, who is a massive force in the cannabis sector. And again, I think people sort of have slightly missed this just because the sector and the industries globally are not having a great time at the moment. It doesn't mean that that hasn't been a huge coup for us and won't we won't reap the dividends of it in the future. So yeah, I'm actually really excited about 2022. As you said, the share price can't get any worse. And I mean, right now we're capped at about 11 and a half million against a NAV of 23 and a half million. I think I've said it before, you know, if someone came, obviously we'd have to put it to shareholders, but if someone came along and wanted to offer us, you know, a multiple of our current market cap, I don't think we'd necessarily, we wouldn't necessarily bite at it, because I think we've got the assets here. We've got the platform that can take us to significantly higher than previous numbers that have been pushed around. But, you know, certainly that £50 million market cap target that I've previously spoke about is one that I think our current platform can get us to and potentially exceed.
Yuma as well has also been building different assets, and it's purchased different assets and so on and so forth. So that has also been a lifestyle CBD business.
Yeah, it's showing growth in revenue numbers. Again, it's not been an easy market for that particular section of the sort of cannabis industry, if you like, over-the-counter wellness products. It's been difficult with online. It's only recently that you're actually able to sell these products online on big platforms like Amazon, for example. So that was a major hamper to these companies' ability to generate revenue. But Yuma has made sensible acquisitions. And again, you know, the team that are behind Yuma were extremely heavily involved in Nuvera, which was sold for 826 million Canadian in sort of 2018. They were also significantly involved in EMAC Life Sciences, which was also sold for all in, you know, it could translate to about $400 million of value. Seed Innovations is the only company that was able to take all cash off the table on day one. So again, we got a lot of grief for that, but certainly in my position as a shareholder of the entity that bought us, I'm 50% down at the moment. So, you know, there's been some highlights, there's been some retrospectively good looking trades that we've made, and Yuma is an example of a company that will go on in the future, and I believe will have a similar ending to a Nuvera or an EMAC, i.e. it will be part of some strong M&A at some point in time. People are obviously obsessed about the share price. I understand that, but you know, it's a completely illiquid market. The other day, a very small amount of shares sent it up 115% in the day. So you can see that it'll move very, very quickly with any kind of buying pressure. I believe the same thing will happen with Seed Innovations when we start to see a bit of liquidity come back into the market. We start to see some actual buyers there. You'll see the share price move very rapidly, is my belief. So again, excited about 2022. sort of glad that 2021 is over or coming to an end. Certainly the beginning bit of the year was great for people sort of punting on stocks. But I think what the next few years might get people doing more than ever is actually looking at real investments rather than trying to trade and flip. And I think the people who are going to win over the next year or two are going to be people who actually build positions, stick with them. If they come down, they buy more, you know, average down, and really drive these things on, because when liquidity comes, it will come. We've seen this time and time again across many, many different cycles. And if you built yourself a really nice position, that liquidity is the moment where you can either choose to use it as your exit, or if you really believe in the fundamentals of the company, stick with it. But more people have made more millions over the years by actually investing rather than trading. That's, I think that's quite factual. Right?
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why, as I already said, I think before earlier to you, was that we chose Seed as an investment, Seed Innovations. One, because of the marketplace it's in, and the spread of investments that it has. And two, because it's valued at less than 50% of its NAV. And that's a pretty cautious NAV as well in most situations. Mm-hmm. So, and there's definitely an uptick to be had with Leap Gaming. And as you say, quite a few of the investments have been knocked heavily because the cannabis and CBD area is just out of favor at this moment in time. Even though as a group, these investments and companies are growing exponentially, I would take it, in terms of how quickly these are going to go to the market. So yeah, from my point of view, I think it's a very exciting group of investments, and it should do very well in 2022. What do you think, Phil?
I think the same. Yeah, I think it's now's the time to start looking at positioning in the, as you mentioned, the wellness sector, and certainly CBD stocks that I've also been invested in have been heavily oversold at the moment. So I think, as Ed says, it's now is the people who make money are the ones, and it's a cliched sentiment and statement that Warren Buffett made, was be greedy when others are fearful. And I don't think there's ever been a more of an apt moment to actually say that in this market, is build a position, be greedy, and just build and hold and be patient, and hopefully it will play out. And just like a lot of the other stocks that are out there at the moment in the nano caps that are just absolute bargains. So yeah, it's a compelling investment, really, for me.
I have to agree. I think obviously I agree about our own stock, Seed Innovations, but I also agree with their other companies, you know, and I trade some stocks, but I don't tend to trade. I tend to, if I want to buy, you know, £50,000 worth of a stock, I won't necessarily just go, bang, broker, buy me £50,000 of X, Y, and Z. I'll go, buy me £20,000, and then I'll, you know, give it a week or two, but gradually I'll build up to my position, and I don't care. It's all about average price. Once I know my average price, that's great. And in the future, if that stock were to dip, well, I liked it at 10. Geez, I'm going to like it at 8. You know, so provided none of the fundamentals have changed. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of lessons that we can all learn from, as you say, looking to the sort of Warren Buffetts of this world, and also people who are much more local and available. And you know, there's lots of guys out there who are on Twitter who've had really successful times, and what you see with a lot of them is that, you know, they're very open about their positions, and as they build them and when they eventually sell, they're also open about that. And I think that's the kind of honesty and help that we can all show one another, because ultimately we all want to make money, and you shouldn't begrudge the guy next to you for making money. You should applaud it you know, get behind it. Ultimately, we're all in it together. We all want to do well. Okay, we're going to have opposing views at times, and that's what creates a market. But you know, finally, from my point of view on the cannabis piece, you know, you do, and it's worth reminding people, on the LSE, there are a number of different cannabis-oriented companies right now, four or five, six of them maybe. And you know, I think the worst one's got a market cap that's more than double us. Yet we've historically delivered real value and companies that have generated revenue and have ultimately sold. And yet we're priced significantly lower than they are, with material positions across quite a few different companies. Now, we understand that, you know, sometimes investment companies will trade at a discount to their net asset value. But, you know, I do encourage people to do their research and look at companies, you know, that make no revenue, have very little chance of doing anything other than burning cash versus, and that's not me wanting to slight any other company, by the way, I'm just talking factually as we stand today. There aren't a lot of companies that are currently generating revenue yet. 30 and 40 million pound market caps are not uncommon. So I think, you know, going back to your point about significant lack of value being applied to these things, I think we are, you know, we're the worst affected in this particular space. Now, that may also be partly because we have a big percentage of our net asset value exposed to a gaming company. But, you know, make no mistake, I think we have invested very wisely in our cannabis assets. We've got a very strong history of delivering on it. And there's no reason why that's not going to happen again.
So, irony of ironies, Ed, what on earth were you thinking about when you took all cash from that deal?
From the MAC sale?
Yes, because there were two. For sure, we would rather have held the shares and be 50% less, better or worse off now.
Well, look, everyone thinks because you do one deal that the other deal must have been better. And I think, you know, let me be clear, there was a reason we had to structure a deal that allowed us to get cash, because we would not have been able to hold Curaleaf shares anyway. It would have caused a great deal of problems because of its recreational focus. So it was the only choice we could do, but obviously we had to negotiate hard to get the value that we did, given it was the only business that was able to take full cash off the table on day one. Every other shareholder is in long-term lock-ins, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we certainly my board battled quite hard, and because obviously I was could have arguably been conflicted, I tried to sort of stay on the right side of things, but. You know, ultimately, we got what was a very good result retrospectively, and we've been able to put that into work, make investments in companies like Eurox, which I believe will go on and be extremely successful. And it's, you know, this is how a fund has to work. We have to, you know, pick our moments. We have to go about our business. We communicate as often as we possibly can. People get very frustrated because there are things we can't talk about. That's just the nature of being a public company. It's not we don't want to. It's sometimes we're just not able to. In the same way, I wish to God I could buy shares in Seed Innovations right now. I get quizzed about it the whole time. I've been super transparent about the fact that I'm inside with Leap. If I wasn't, I would have bought. I have the ability to buy right now in terms of cash. So believe me, I'd like to buy stock.
Yeah, and the point I was making is now that you did take cash from me, Mac, you've been able to use that cash in a much more efficient way than if you still were tied in with EMAC, even though I know there was a lot of dissenters at that time. So yeah. All in all, that has worked out really well. And yes, I hope for your sake and our sake that Leap goes well for one, and that Seed gets its true value during 2022.
We hope so too, and we believe so.
Okay, so based on the fact that this is a Christmas themed podcast, and I guess I kind of know the direction that this question will lead to, Ed, the question is, if money was no object, what would be your ultimate Christmas present?
Oh, God. I mean, as you know, I'm a big car enthusiast. yeah, tricky one. I'd love a... What I would quite like is an AMG, Mercedes AMG GT3 car, race car, because I've seen those absolutely destroy a lot of the cars up and down the GT car, British GT this year.
Yeah.
They are absolute beasts.
What about something like a Miura, like a Verdi Miura or something like that?
That would be significantly better from an investment perspective. I would agree, but you know, we were talking purely about desire there. If it was purely investment perspective, I'd like someone to give me the most expensive. I'd like a Ferrari 250 GTO, please.
Yeah.
Greatest Christmas present will actually probably be next year when I believe we're going to get to somewhere near a kind of value that even our net asset value, which is always delayed, will hopefully show. So
what's the Christmas present that you've received that was your best Christmas present, the most memorable Christmas present?
That's a very good one. It's a very good one. And not to get the violins out, but my family, we've never been massive on Christmas, and that's not because of any kind of religious thing or whatever. I think it's because my dad's Northern, to be honest. He's a Geordie, so I think...
Well, you're talking to two Northerners as well here, so just...
Right, exactly. I'm a half... Well, that makes me a half Northerner, as you know.
A can of Newcastle brown ale.
Exactly. So,
all from Newcastle.
It was never a huge thing, to be honest, Christmas. We've always just sort of not really got birthdays, Christmas, all that sort of stuff. We've never really got enormous presents. One year, many, many years ago, I did get a Seiko watch. It was a metal strap watch, and that was back in the day when, you know, like that looked quite bling, even if it wasn't, they weren't as common as they are now. I'm sure it cost very little, but it was that was a cool gift. But yeah, no, I, as I said, Christmas for us has never been. Unfortunately, we also lost my brother when he was only 16 and I was about 19, and that also puts a bit of a shade on Christmas. But now I've got my own kid. It's fun. My kid's getting on. He's not quite at the age where it's going to be brilliant fun for him yet, but he's getting close to that. He's, you know, getting on for 2 years old. So
they're at the stage now where he's getting more fun from the boxes than he is actually the presents.
Exactly. He's more interested.
Just buy a big box from Tesco's and you'll be fine.
Well, if he sees a Hoover, he gets really excited about the Hoover. So
that's all good. Just get the Hoover out on Christmas morning, then you'll be laughing.
We have got a mini Henry Hoover for him. So he's
going to
be overjoyed.
And in a few years' time, you'll be able to buy him those cars that you wish in miniature.
Well, we hope so. I mean, look, you know, the ambition, I think people are sort of think that the ambition for, certainly my own ambition, is to get the company to a certain level. Like, there's no limit, really, to, you know, if we can take it to a billion, we'll do it. So it's really a question of, you know, how soon we can sort of turn the tables and install that that trust in the market that we are people that will serially deliver, and then gradually I think we'll grow and grow. But those growth spurts can become very, very quick. You know, once you start getting to a certain number, you know, the growth from there can be, you know, in weeks, and it's often the way. You know, it can take a long, long time, almost like a war of attrition, to get to a point where you're actually somewhat more fairly valued, and from that point, you know, it only takes one asset, it only takes one big sale or one big joint venture, and these are all things that we're working on. And again, going back to Leap as an example, you know, we are at no point, even while we go through the IPO process, have we ruled out M&A opportunities. And these things, you know, every possible route is considered, and effort is put into all of them. So, you know, there's no limit to the ambition of what we can do. But first things first, we've just got to keep building our assets and making sure that they're as valuable as they possibly can be. I think we've got the right team to do it. I think we've, in the companies that we're invested in, where we have material influence, we've made sure that the right people have been brought in to add their value. And I think that fruition will start to come in 2022.
Good. And then one final question, based on the fact this is the Sunday roasts. What is your archetypal Christmas lunch or dinner in the McDermott household?
So, funny enough, we're not, like, turkey's okay, but we're not mad about it. So we tend to go for chicken. My wife's pescatarian, so she will probably have fish. Probably chicken, I think, is the honest. So it'll be a chicken roast rather than a turkey roast. My mum's a very good cook, and depending on what the joyous government decides to do with us this year, hopefully we'll all be spending Christmas together. We've all largely all had COVID now, so hopefully everyone's all jacked and everything else. And had
I
COVID.
Think they've said you can all have a party with as many people as you want, wherever you want. To be honest, I think that's what they did themselves last year, so available.
I get the impression that this year, I don't think it will be as listened to as previous times. I think that you know, that's been lost entirely. So whatever restrictions are put in place, I don't think they're going to be hugely adhered to, but we'll see.
Ed McDermott, CEO of Seed Innovations, we wish you a great Christmas.
And to you guys, I hope you have a lovely time. And a great new year. Hopefully it's a good new year for all of us.
Yeah. Merry Christmas and God bless.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.